All right, guys, we're back again doing another Trail Talk episode. This time we're out here with Lori Beard. She is one of the original gangsters, I guess you could say, from the Winter Jamboree. We're on Plan B. We just, you know, come out here. We're going to talk about some stuff, and I'm super stoked to be in a Jeep. I love this. I love doing these. I get to ride in a lot of cool rigs. How did you guys get into this? Because you and Eric... For those who don't know, Eric's your husband, right?
Yeah, Eric's my husband.
And you guys, every time I turn around, everybody's like, oh yeah, Eric and Lori made that trail. Eric and Lori made that trail. Eric and Lori made that trail. And they're referencing all these trails out here at Sand Hollow. So how'd you guys get into this?
So I married into it. Okay. Eric was doing it before even the lake was there. So he was up here with his friend Victor almost every weekend. They put in Double Sammy, lots of West Rim, Chain Reaction, and The Maze, which is my personal favorite. So
that's like the Hell's Revenge of Sand Hollow. That's the one everybody has to do, if you ask me.
Yeah, and then so we... Eric used to help when the Utah for WDA used to do an event down here, and then it became Southwest Crawl Fest, and then it became Winter on the Rocks, and then Jamboree started, and Jamboree stuck around for 10 years. So we built a lot of trails together since I got married to him and started with Eric. So this one, Plan B, that we're on, we came out and built because we needed a simpler trail for Jamboree because the sixes and fives and sevens are just not as common.
Yeah.
At that. So we came out and scoped this place. Eric would walk it and say, I think going this way is cool, and then we just drive it.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what goes into that? Is it just literally just like, well, let's just hike and see if we can then also drive there kind of thing, or just drive a little bit and then, like, I'll go see what's up over that hill, see if we can make it on the other side. Is that really how it's done?
Yeah, Eric would do a lot of the walking ahead, and then he'd put cairns up. And sometimes it actually took us a couple trips to do the trails, and we'd come out and just be like, okay, we went this way, can we remember? And then we would go and do the runs, and then sometimes we'll be like, well, let's try this one over here instead. And so we'd move things around sometimes. TNT, when we put that one in, we were looking for a harder trail, and so... And a lot of people see, like, have kind of created different routes, so that's not the original way.
Oh, really?
Over here is the original route.
Okay, because that, looking at it, that has way more tire mark than this, but that's, I guess you wouldn't know that unless you're out here with someone like you who can say, hey, no, I put this in. This is how it's supposed to go, technically.
Yeah. A lot of things have been adjusted and changed to accommodate for different rigs and their capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the original route. That really steep down kind of right over there is a little less steep.
Yeah.
So Jeff likes that one, and he goes and runs that one and teach their own. The nice thing about being out here on Sand Mountain is it is open OHB. You can build new trails. The difference from 10 years ago and now is a lot of the trails start doing a lot of offshoots, and so sometimes they can be confusing to run. And we've been out here previously and put up signage. So, like, on Plan B, people would get lost. And so we came out here, and all those Carsonite signs, the ones that Eric was putting back up, we actually put up. With the BLM's permission, they supplied all the signs and the stickers, and we came out with UPLA and drafts and put them up. I'm actually the secretary of UPLA, and Eric is the vice president. We were part of it when it first started. Lauren has done a great job, the current president, of expanding its reach. And when Jamboree came about, we were the land exchange for up here was on the table with a developer for the Red Cliffs Preserve. And so the Jamboree and Drats were the fundraising arm, and Utah Public Lands Alliance became the more political side. We had some benefactors that were pretty big in the off-road, and they loved this area, and so they helped us get started. And so we've just been working hard on, you know, keeping this open and getting the trails we enjoy.
For sure. So just so people know, the DRATS, that's Desert Roads and Trail Society, right? And then UPLA is Utah Public Lands Alliance. Both of those things are something you should go check out. They put in a lot of work and a lot of effort into maintaining, like she's saying, maintaining this stuff so we can still come do it. And kind of being the political, or taking on the political challenges with it as well. So when you come out and you do a trail, or I guess another question I would ask is, how many do you cut a year? Or I say cut as if you're actually making the trail, but like, how many trails do you add a year? Or is there a number? Or is it just kind of like, well, we need a one that does this type of thing?
Yeah, recently, in the last recent years, we haven't really added a ton. So like, some of the newer ones were not us, but they are really fun. Like, so Simon, I know he's put in a lot, and not exactly sure who put in the ledges, but that's a fun one. We just went and ran Armageddon, which is a really brand new one, the other weekend for a pre-run for Jamboree. And it was, I mean, they're pretty spectacular. So a lot of the newer ones we haven't had a part of, but a lot of the original ones we did. So
That's really cool. And like you were saying, I think, so maybe you can help me understand. You're saying a lot of the new stuff becomes like an offshoot of another trail. And my mind goes to Chain Reaction, where there's been, as from my understanding, a bunch of extensions like Masterlink or Broken Chain or things that come off of that. Is that kind of what you're referring to? Is like, we're on this trail and somebody's looking up and like, I think I could do that. We can make this a section.
Yeah, so Broken Chain, Eric and our friend Nick at the time, Nick has a buggy, and so as the cars evolved, those harder trails started getting more and more built. So, like, Chain is more friendly to my vehicle. Broken Chain is more friendly to longer wheelbases and more buggy-type things. And so, yeah, people just look at it, and they'll be like, that looks cool. And so they go do it, and they've built these big buggy trails, a lot of the rear steer guys. So when we came out, like, I have pictures of the Maze and Plan B with like hardly any black.
Really?
Like, yeah,
where it's just kind of like you're saying, you're still trying to remember, like, was it that way that we went?
Yeah. And so back then there wasn't as much usage, so the trails, the when it rained and stuff, the black would kind of wash away and it was very faint. But now it gets so much usage, it's just covered. But yeah.
Yeah, there's people out here a lot.
A lot. So like Plan B, we put in for an event so that we could get more simpler trails, because at the time we had, when we added Double Sammy to the roster, that was like one of our only newer trails besides Milts and West Rim and Fault Line that were simpler. So we came out and designed Plan B, and I think we did this one for Winter on the Rocks, and the first time we did it, so a lot of the area had been beat down because that first canyon we went through, those boulders we went over, they used to be a lot taller and a lot bigger, and it used to be a lot more challenging. So it's actually gone down, but the first time we ran it during an event, Jeff, he had the pleasure of running it for the first time, and he didn't get back until 2 a.m.
Oh, no.
We actually cut part of Plan B out for the original run because of the last three obstacles is where he spent a lot of time and had to winch a lot of vehicles up. So
kind of a, I played that game, that was enough for me. We're not doing that again.
Yeah, so I mean they're still there and people still do like find them and run them, but we don't run them as part of the official trail anymore. Okay.
When you first put in Plan B, this is just my own personal kind of question. Did you put in both upper and lower at the same time?
Yeah, it took multiple trips out here. It didn't happen all at once.
Right.
Eric had been eyeballing this side because the maze runs along the cliff, and he's like, it'd be cool to have another one with these epic views. And so we came over here, you know, multiple trips out. Anyways, and so then we ran it for Winter on the Rocks, and it's a trail, and the Plan B name, we couldn't really come up with a name, and then it's so far out here, at the time it was like one of the furthest, Unforgiven is further now, and so we were just like, well, if you can't think of anything else, you can go to Plan B way out there, so. So, a lot of the previous events, they would donate, their money, but they wouldn't donate like the entire proceeds. And at the time with the land exchange, we wanted to definitely put as much power and money behind it as we could. So Winter Jamboree donates almost all of its proceeds. When we first started up, Jeff fronted all the money to get it going. And he was a little nervous about that type of money. But so the only thing they really keep back is the proceeds needed and necessary to get the next event going.
Oh, well, it's important to have the next one, you know. Yeah, things don't operate in a vacuum. They do take money to run.
Yeah. And so but nobody on the board gets paid. It's a completely volunteer. They do provide all of the volunteer trail leaders with a hoodie and a gas card for their time, but nobody gets an income off of
a salary or something.
Yeah, and so none of that board gets an income. I'm not part of the board over there because I'm UPLA, but I've been part of Jamboree for years, so. So it's a really good cause. They donate to Utah Public Lands Alliance, Blue Ribbon Coalition. They also donate to Utah 4WDA and just a lot of land use user groups.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. And it's like, I don't know, it becomes more and more as this place kind of blows up, that kind of, you know, protection and like the making sure that we have it for future use becomes more and more important.
Yeah.
We got everyone with us still? Yep. Sure do.
I was just checking. So this obstacle has definitely changed over the years.
Yeah, it looks super undercut.
So Eric's original rig that he built a lot of these trails in, we used to call Slinky, and it just, it was a totally different animal, and it was a standard. So when we got married, this came up for sale, and it was a deal, and we couldn't pass it up. It had the tons and stuff already in it and the ARBs, and so we have added other modifications through the years. So we put the boat sides in, we've put a full float kit in, and cutter brakes, which by the way are like the best, most amazing helpful tool. No, they're over here.
Okay, these look like a line lock almost.
Those are line locks for the front, and then we have these on the rear.
Okay. So you can spin it on a dime.
Yeah. It's very helpful in a lot of the harder trails. Today, I haven't used it, and we do a lot of front drive, rear drive.
Okay. Is this an Atlas?
Yeah.
So you can do the full splitter, you know. Front dig, rear drive, rear dig, yeah, all that stuff. That's really cool. That's one thing that I think side by sides. I mean, that kind of stuff is kind of coming to that industry, but for the most part, it's not there. Like, I don't know how you would do a splitter transfer case where you could do a front digger or something in that kind of a machine. But it's there's other stuff that, you know, makes up for it.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. I'm not. Eric's the mechanic, and he does all of the things on here. I'm the support system while he's working in the shop. I'll be like, okay, I'll hold the flashlight for you. I understand in the 14 years I've been doing this, I understand more of the lingo and what the purpose of everything is, but the mechanics behind it and how to, yeah, that's not me.
Sure.
So Eric takes amazing pictures. My husband takes amazing pictures. And so how I ended up driving was he would hand me the camera, but it wasn't this really fancy one. But I didn't know anything about cameras, so I never adjusted it. So he would always get back and be like grumpy about the pictures I took. And plus, I didn't want to get out because I enjoyed riding. And so we just... I ended up taking over. Yeah. One time I was like, here, you go take the pictures. I'll drive. And that was on chain. So the first trail I drove was Chain Reaction.
Oh, that's, you know, a nice, easy starter trail.
It's a great starter trail.
Yeah, he does take some awesome photos. For everybody just listening, right now we're just kind of waiting for Jeff and I forget her name.
Susan.
They're coming around a tricky little obstacle, but it's kind of fun to see him spotting over the roof. That's one thing that I think is missed, kind of with the, I don't want to say the divide, but the fact that side-by-sides and Jeep guys haven't blended as much in the past.
Yeah.
Is I feel like there's some old cats out here like Jeff. And, like, not saying you guys are old, but people that have been in the sport longer that just, like I say, I feel like he's, what we just saw right there, he's confident enough, and Susan's confident enough that he can just, like, oh, in my mirror, I know where you need to go, just do this. And I don't think that a lot of that gets passed on to, like, younger generations, I guess, that have just bought a side-by-side, because we don't get out and run these trails with you guys.
Yeah, so it's... A lot of the obstacles and stuff, just trusting your spotter is huge. And I've even started spotting a bit, like because of Jamboree, Eric would be, I drive the trail and he is like outside spotting and helping. But, you know, sometimes Eric's not there, so I started spotting. But yeah, we just look out for each other. You always make sure that the person behind you is keeping up and there. Like when we were bombing through the dunes on the way up here, Eric's fast. He's got a lead foot. Every once in a while, we'd stop and look back and make sure everybody was still coming and we were still having fun. But we look out for each other. And yeah, there's many times everybody takes their turn on the trail having a complication and.
Yep.
I'll just make do, but we've been out here a lot. We know a lot of the trail, like, etiquette and how to take care of things. We want this to stay open, and so I think it boils down to education and the people who are buying the rigs right off the shelf and just... Like, the state has put in the certification for an off-road vehicle, which I think is huge. It's kind of a necessary thing.
I will say that there's a lot of people that I see, even I posted a video about it with Trail Hero, people saying, like, oh, this is just the state wants money. This is, you know, this, that, or the other thing. But from my perspective, that is 100% a necessary thing, and I'm very happy they did.
Yeah, I'll answer that, and I'll respond in a second.
Yeah, sorry. Woohoo!
Okay, so...
Sorry, I started asking you a question at the wrong time.
It's all good. They, it's completely free to do that. It's a way that the state wants to help educate the off-road users and how to, you know, take care of our lands and keep our lands open. A lot of the state... there's a state organization, PLBCO, that's working hard to, like, educate and keep people doing what they need to be doing to keep it all open and respect the rights of all user groups.
Yeah.
It's I really actually think it was a smart idea to do.
Well, I do too.
Kind of
even
necessary.
Like I say, even from the people on my side of the aisle who might think that it's like aggravating or whatever, like I did it the like first week it came out. It's not that hard. And do you need some help on the side?
No, I'm just going to show you. That's the original route behind us. And then this
the one in the middle or the far one?
The one in the middle.
Okay, this one's way gnarlier.
It's actually easier.
Is it really?
Yeah, that wall gets really slick and hard to get up. There's less traction, especially on a day where it's rained and it's wet.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, you just walked right up that. That was cool.
For rigs like this, that's a little bit harder with the traction and things, so.
Oh, and you're a little shorter wheelbase, too, so that straight up wall, a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah, so like UTVs and stuff, those walls are nothing, but because they have such a low center of gravity and they're not heavy like we are. So a lot of people go up there, original routes this way, so we'll be going this way.
This is cool. I like this. Because I've ran this trail, and like you say, I went to the right, and I go up that way when I come this way. So it's cool to get out with you guys in particular to come see this, because this kind of looks like, you know, oh, you could go here, but it's cool to know that this is how it originally was.
So this is like a little box canyon right here, so we walk that to look at it, but trying to keep the rating lower, we didn't drop down into there and keep along the canyon. That's why we came up the side.
Yeah, so. Well, it's still very pretty. I asked Jeff this as well. How often when you guys go out, have you not necessarily even invited someone from the side-by-side community, but like how often have you had someone go with you? Is it just me on Turkey Run? Is that it?
No, there are times where a lot of the people we have, like Gabe Payne, we've gone out with him. He's a big side-by-side, and he's also part of UPLA. It's not as often because they just move a lot faster than us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we just don't do it as often, but yeah, we do, and we're open to it. Like, it's just a lot of the people we hang out with have Jeeps. But yeah, so we, like last time we actually ran Plan B, our friend John, his friends came in their Razor, and it was, it's not as built like your Razor, so it was a little more effort for them to get up, so.
Well, mine's still fine. Not very built. I still have Jared. I keep the Yankum hooked up to Jared, and he stays in front of me, and then I just say, don't go too far, because you might have to pull me. But, but that's one thing I like doing is coming out with you guys, because this, to me, I like it all. I love watching, you know, big solid axle rigs just go through twisty stuff that I'm just like, man, there's no way, you know, like, I don't, just that. That right there would have just been hitting the bottom, all sorts of crazy stuff.
Sorry, I'm just watching back to make sure they make it. I'm going to come park up here where I can see them.
No, that's totally okay.
Jeff's probably out spotting Susan up that spot we went up.
I can see their flag at least, so that's good.
Yeah.
It's not upside down. I can see flags and not tires, so that's a good good indicator.
So usually we end up stopping right here just for, you know, to make sure everybody gets up. So she's down on that bottom obstacle right there.
Yep. That first one that you said was actually easier than the wall. She's a little longer than you, right? She said she was 110?
Yeah. She's 105.
105, that's right.
Yeah.
That's not
so
terribly longer.
Yeah. Oh. So I know Jeff's out with her right now. He's not in his rig, so he's spotting her up. Sit right here for a second to make sure everything's good. She's moving.
That's all right.
So.
Yep.
But anyways, so this trail's actually gotten a little bit easier over the years in some respects. And then, and the other option instead of over there on that wall. So and during Jamboree, that wall can get pretty slimy and just hard warm. To navigate. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask you along the same sides of the side-by-side thing. So that's kind of why I'm doing this whole thing is somebody's got to sit down and have the conversation, so I might as well do it. I feel like I know that there's a lot of like self-policing that needs to happen with the side-by-side or group, but I guess what's the one thing that like bugs you the most? Like if this was your therapy session and you're like, you know what? Side-by-side guys are a-holes because of this. What would that be?
If you asked Eric, it would just be all of the like expanding of the trails outward, but it's just to accommodate for the rig differences. For me, it's like when you're on the trail. So like when we were on the maze last, mm-hmm. wasn't during the turkey run, there was a big group of side-by-sides that came in, and they just, instead of like waiting for us to navigate where we were, they just cut like around us and through us. And for me, that's it's not just side-by-side people that would do that. Like I've seen good and bad on both sides. So yeah. That for me is not etiquette. Like you would get out and you would say, hey, do you guys mind if we get right by you because we're going to move faster?
Yeah. Can we play through? Exactly.
There's a little bit of communication there. It's just like when Eric and I canyoneer, and so one of the things there is when you run into another group and you're a smaller group, yeah, the etiquette is to let them play through, but there's a communication that needs to take mm-hmm. place, not just...
Yeah, you don't just go do it. You just go whip around somebody.
Yeah, and so things like that, and then one year when I was leading the maze on Winter on the Rocks, we were coming the original direction, and a big group of razors, because people come and watch during Jamboree, and they just dropped in right in the middle of the lead trail, and I've seen Jeep groups do the same thing. It's like these people have paid for an experience for a good cause. Yes, the mountain's open, but drop in behind us or wait until we get by. So it just comes down to etiquette and education and how, I mean, it needs to be done in both groups too.
Yeah, that's one thing that I have noticed is that I feel like from the side-by-side group, like there's just the general non-etiquette or just the general ineducation of the trail etiquette and stuff like that. But I'm trying to figure out, like, that's why I asked you, like, how many times have you ridden with side-by-sides? I'm trying to figure out, like, how can we...
Bridge that gap?
Yeah, bridge that gap of, like, because they're never going to learn if and I say they as if it's not me. But unless you get the chance to have that conversation or go out with someone like this, and I feel like the rocks in particular is good because as capable as side-by-sides are, they are still pretty close to the same speed as a Jeep in the rocks.
Yeah.
On the dunes, like, I'm sorry, we'll meet you at the trailhead. But in the rocks, like, there is no real need for that, like, oh, we're going to just zip around you.
There's really not in a lot of respects. I feel like just open communication, opening gestures, like reaching out to people. Totally go out for a run with you and your group. Like, we're out here most weekends during the winter.
Yeah.
During the summer is way too hot. Eric, when he was younger and hardcore before the lake was built, he was a single dad, so this is one of the things that he could do with his daughters. So they would be out here in brutal temperatures.
Yeah.
We used to go night willing and be home at like 2 or 3 in the morning during the summer because it's just hot.
Yeah.
I'm too old for that anymore.
Yeah. It seems like the older I get, the later I stay up, it's like exponentially worse in the morning. So.
Yeah, it comes down to we're just, old.
Yep.
I'm not 20 anymore. We feel it the next morning when we stay up late.
For sure. And then you're trying to drag your butt to work and you're like, man, there's not enough coffee in the world for this.
Yeah, night wheeling though is a whole different ball game. It changes what the what the trail looks like and everything.
Yeah, so. Well, it's lots of fun. I like it. I still get out, but like my cutoff is like I'm home by 11. I got kids, you know. It's not a good time to come home late or keep them out late or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm curious if you could see one thing that like the two groups, you know, side by sides or jeeps. What's one thing the side by side guys could do to kind of, I don't know, I think it's what I'm doing of like, hey, can I come just run a trail with you guys? Because I will say my emotions on this, since I've done a few of these interviews, have been very sporadic. I started this out thinking, you know what, side by side guys, a lot of us are kind of jerks, whatever. But then I've had some conversations with people and guys in the Bronco community, or even, you know, Liz, my sister,
yeah,
who she's gone, you know, to the Bronco Off Rodeo, and people have said, like, we try to go with the Jeep people, but they just don't seem to want us to go with them. And I was like, well, that's freaking rude. But then I started thinking about it. I was like, I've never actually encountered that. So I don't know how much of that is just perceived, and I'm assuming most of it is just perceived. And so then I just, every time I talk to someone like you or Jeff or Susan, it's not that. So I think that when it comes down to it, I think you're right. I think it's just putting away the misperception that you might already have and just having a conversation, because I swung back and forth on this for a minute, and I'm now back to just what you said of you just gotta have the talk, like just have the conversation, because everybody's out here trying to have fun and do things the right way for the most part. You just gotta talk to someone else to convince them that you are also doing that.
Yeah. A lot of conflict resolution is just communication. Communication in all areas. Everybody needs to do their part to reach out and talk. And part of it is doing exactly what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Eric's fixing the signs that we put in as he hikes along the trail taking pictures. Like, this is an alternative route to, like, the ones that we cut off. So it comes up this way, and then it loops around. And so I don't know if people, when they're turning, just misjudge or what.
Or
so
they thought they were going this way and then decided to go that way. Or
so, like, etiquette, like, that's not something, like, it's in a spot that's out of the way. That was totally avoidable. Who knows who did it? It could have been a Jeep. It could have been a Razor. But, like, that's where the education comes in and communication with each other. So.
Yeah, well, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I'm honestly really excited. I love riding around in Jeeps. I do get a little nervous. You guys are a lot taller than me. So, you know, Tilt the World's a little interesting being tilted down there. But this has been awesome. I just want to make sure I give you a chance. Is there anything anybody that sees this video should go check out? Anything like that that you want them to go see?
Yeah, they really just really support those off-road groups that are trying to make a difference. Well, UPLA and DRATS especially, like, they've worked hard on this mountain, especially because they were invested in it. We live here. We built a lot of the trails. They support a lot of projects up here to make it better. UPLA and DRATS have worked together to put the restrooms up at Top of the World, on West Rim, the staging area at Waddy's Corral, and then DRATS worked hard to get the road paved because the washout, the drainage was tearing it up, and people were struggling getting to use the corral and getting their tow rigs out.
You almost need a Jeep to get up to where you can unload your Jeep.
Yeah. So just those groups. Winter Jamboree is a great event. They don't have side-by-sides on it. We just, at the time when we set it up, there wasn't a whole lot of side-by-side users and people willing to lead trails. That's something, I don't know, it's a board. I'm not part of the board. But they really do put the money back into our land use. And so that's just supporting those type of events that really do support all the user groups. It's UPLA is huge. They've been working hard across the state on issues. Right now, they've been in communication, and so has Strats, Jeff, on this land exchange with the Water Conservancy and trying to protect our access over on West Rim and how that's going to look in the future. And so comments are actually due today. So,
yeah. Well, I filed mine, so everybody else, well, this won't come out before then. But I'll do a separate thing and see if people go make comments on that, because that stuff's scary. Like, to me, that's, like, literally scary. It seems like I haven't been here as long as you guys. And even in the amount of time I've been here, that water district stuff has come up twice in the 3 to 4 years I've been here. And I don't know how to make it, like, become a settled thing for good, and it feels like it's not possible. It feels like we're going to have this, you know, recircle the wagons on this once or twice a year.
Yeah, so what's going on with the re-coming up is it's the process. It's the NEPA process, and the whole process they go anytime BLM is trading out land. Mm-hmm. There's an entire process. So there's the scoping process, which is what came up a year and a half, 2 years ago. Yep. And then this right now is the comment period on the plan that's come up after the scoping process, after they've done the environmental impact and all of those things. So there's lots of stages, and UPLA and DRATS work hard to be a part of those stages. We have a lot of different user groups, so like the people that put on the ATV, I think it's ATV Jamboree, like Casey Lofthouse, he's been part of there. It's the Tri-State ATV group out of like Hurricane and stuff. So they've been, so Tri-State Jamboree is what it is. So they've been part of this process as well. So we all actually work together when it comes to our mountain pretty well. So
yeah.
We may not always go out together, but we work together when it's needed.
Yeah, well, it's definitely needed. That right there just scared the tar out of me. You have so much clearance. If I did that in my razor, I would have felt that in my spine for a week.
And that didn't feel hard at all.
No, it wasn't. Well, there was a rock right here. Like, I watched it come up to your boat sides, and I was like, oh no, it's going to smack, and then it just, nope, just goes over it. So.
Well, and even if it smacked, it's a boat side made out of steel. That's what they're for.
Yep.
When we put the boat sides in, it made a lot of the obstacles out here a lot simpler and easier because we didn't get hung up, and they've taken a lot of hits through the years.
Well, that's what they're for. It's a good thing that they're doing it. So,
yeah.
All righty. Well, this has been a good talk. You guys go check out all of Lori's stuff, Adventure Live Love, everything she mentioned, and we're going to wrap this trail up pretty quick here, but catch you on the next one.